Let's crack into it. I'm very excited to talk about this next song. Very excited.
Oh my.
Nice big Kev reference.
He wasn't very excited. No, he was just excited. He was just regular time excited. Big Kev was an amateur compared to...
In terms of what he said, but in terms of how he said it, I think it suggests that he was very excited.
If you can be excited at all about like something that helps you get stickers off of things easier.
He showed us that you can.
Yeah.
He taught us so much. Bring up the slideshow, please.
of Big Kev.
Big Kev. I'd like to dedicate this episode to Big Kev.
To Big, I'm excited, Kev.
Kev.
What do you think his last name was?
Kev.
Kev. Gonna know you now, but I'm gonna love you anyhow. We are Hottest 100s and Thousands, and we've taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we run, we take cover, and we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young, and I am one of the four sexomatic Venus freaks you are gonna be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me once again, Andrew McDonald.
David, thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. Nathan Harrison.
Hey.
And Adam Buncher.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know the sexy ones.
God, well, we're
it.
All...
Yeah, you're just polite.
To be fair, she doesn't have a sexy voice either. It's all...
like that?
like Tom Waits?
She's basically Tom Waits.
I think she's more like Rod Stewart.
Yeah, I can see
like
that.
Female Rod Stewart.
With the rasp, yeah.
Who are we talking about? Keep listening. Forward cell. Radio.
That's nice. A real forward cell,
love
baby.
It. Thanks, man.
Don't change that. Podcast selection.
I mean, encouraging them to hit plus 15, if anything.
Mm.
Might turn into a plus 30. Did anyone else get that?
Modern life, you know.
Yes, plus 30 and minus 15.
We already joke about like a Black Mirror episode where you could plus 30 on your life.
Yeah.
We did?
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure we did.
Sounds like us.
Either on or off mic. I remember the Black Mirror pilot.
You do it all the time, mate. Like, you just do it all the time.
You just sit there doing it.
You just do it so quick. You wouldn't stop doing it until you stopped very suddenly doing it.
Jesus Christ.
That was really sad. It was really sad.
I'm just imagining
it like being on the wall and you'd start, you'd be like, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. You'd be like...
And then you come home and you'd be like really tired and like, look, I just want
to get it.
I'm just going to heat it a few times and then go to bed.
Or like you put the kettle on and be like, I'm not going to wait for it to cook. Oh. I'll just press it a couple of times.
Preheating the oven.
That's very good for preheating
the oven. Sweet shit.
If you could bring it to work, it'd be very popular.
Woof.
I'm so sad.
The hard woof.
God damn it.
In the meantime, smash cut!
So scared.
With the Blair Witch remix of the Order of Death.
This is what you want, this is what you get. This is what you want, this is what you get. This is what you want, this is what you get.
So, that was Public Image Ltd. making their debut, actually, in the Hottest 100 ever, but also in the Hottest 100 of 1999. That's a song called The Order of Death, which came out originally in the 1980s on an album called This Is What You Want.
This Is What You Get.
Indeed. But in 1999, there was a little film that we all know and love called The Blair Witch Project. And for whatever reason, this song was selected to be a part of that soundtrack and remixed especially to be involved in the movie.
It's not a soundtrack, it's
songs inspired.
One of the characters' mixtape.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He has
right. It's like Cloverfield. It's
Josh's mix kind of
Oh, like in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it took like the idea of
the modern day Blair Witch Project.
The found footage idea, did that extend to the soundtrack
as
well?
Yeah, I guess it did. Yeah. It's like Cloverfield, the same thing.
Yeah.
Say what you will about the Blair Witch Project, but fuck, that was an ambitious movie.
Yeah.
I'll say what I will. Haven't seen it.
There's
never heard of it.
Blair Witch, never heard of her.
I haven't either. But
are we all going to go watch the Blair Witch Project together after this?
There's no way it would hold up now. It's influenced culture too deeply.
So you're saying it wouldn't be very scary now? Maybe I will watch it.
But here's the thing, right? It influenced culture in the sense that, you know, like found footage was then... It became a thing. But I don't think it ever properly kind of did it. Like, that's the tragedy of it. Like,
no one's made a good found footage movie.
Yeah. Blair Witch was the first one to do a found footage film. I haven't seen it, so I don't know how well it kind of did it. And everyone tried to do it. But I love the idea so much.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it and gone like, yeah,
the
you
thing is
it.
As well with the Blair Witch Project, it was a more naive time. I remember specifically
9/11
is the in the pre-9/11 halcyon days of our culture. I remember specifically, I didn't see it, but in primary school people were talking about this movie and saying like, is it real, right? There was a narrative outside of the film, and it was really
that was
early.
The marketing. Like, yeah. They were pushing that these actors had disappeared and that it was a documentary.
Yeah.
And that was the whole thing about the Blair Witch Project,
and
right?
As 10-year-old babies, who are we to be able to decipher,
right.
Like...
Well, they actually had missing posters posted up, like, officially, you know, saying that, hey, these actors in this film are missing and whatever. Like, that's part of the ambition that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
To take it to that kind of extent.
I'm pretty sure they had like an online component as well, which would be very ahead of its time in the late 90s, to have like this multimedia campaign to sell what would have been an incredibly cheap film to make, like by design, on like intentionally cheap to make, because it has to look cheap because it's meant to be just some campers.
Some camcorder that they found from some now missing people like out in the wilderness that they're releasing just so...
Yeah, fascinating, right?
Man, so again, like say what you will about the Blair Witch Project in terms of it actually being a film, but like on paper, it's utterly fascinating and kind of applaudable that it happened.
Yeah. Jeez Louise. Like, I know I'm David, but I didn't know you all had to be Margaret. I didn't know how this was going to...
I never thought we'd get to talk about Public Image Limited on this podcast.
You're a fan?
Yeah, definitely. Public Image Limited, if you don't know them, that's the band that John Lydon, aka Johnny Rotten, formed after the Sex Pistols kind of dissolved.
Never heard of them.
Their first few records are absolute stone cold classics of that weirdo kind of post-punk that adopted influences of like dub and like...
And it's literally
reggae.
Post-punk in this instance.
Yeah, quite literally, yeah. The first two records, First Edition and Metal Box, are absolute classics. And then this was from a later period. The original version of this is from the 1984, which is kind of be after when they were still making some reasonably good music. And this is also from the record that has This Is Not a Love Song on it, which is kind of a crossover hit for the idea of like an 80s new wave post-punk band, at least. This isn't super remixed. It sounds very close to the original, just with a bunch of like audio from the film put into it.
Yeah.
And like they turned down the midwave synth and upped the bass a touch. It's not really a remix. But that makes sense for the idea of the context of the film, it just being like someone's mixtape.
Well, it's the Spawn style. It's like, hey, it's me, the Blair Witch.
Hey, it's me, the Blair Witch.
I feel like listening to some Public Image.
PIL. Actually, when you think about it, John Lydon is overrepresented from the persona of Johnny Rotten. Public Image Limited had a much more influential and interesting take on punk music. Let's listen to a few tunes.
I think you'll find their magic.
But also... This is lazy as shit.
For a song.
Oh, God. Oh,
it's the bare minimum you could do. This was already used in a dystopic sci-fi horror film in the early 90s.
What was
really?
It?
The name of the film...
What, do you mean it's the songwriting is lazy, or the song inclusion on the soundtrack is lazy, or what?
The remix is lazy.
Oh, really? That's what I mean. It's not even a remix. They just took the song and, like, had this...
I'm going to put it out there. I don't particularly care for the original either.
I'm here for the original.
Yeah.
The name of the movie was called Hardware.
Right.
It wasn't bespoke.
Any big famous people in it that we'd know?
I don't know. Ethan Hawke. it was not a bespoke made song.
Yeah.
You know, it actually came from the album This Is What You Want, This Is What You Get by Public Image. So it's already been used as a soundtrack song, and they literally just took it, and then they just took some grabs from the film and put it over.
And they're way too loud in the mix.
It is miraculously lazy.
It's a real kid singing Bubble Goose situation.
It's just...
Hell yeah.
I can't help but like respect how little effort was put in.
Can you imagine how fucking weird it would be just to have the radio on and then this comes on?
Well, I mean, it did.
It did enough, but just for hearing, A, the song itself is pretty weird for a fucking...
It's not a radio song.
It's not a radio song. It's the last song on the album. It's like an outro track that just has this like synth groove and then John having a loop of the album name playing a few times through it. That's the song.
Yeah.
And then to hear that on the radio with like, I'm so fucking scared. Oh my God, it's the Blair Witch. Like when you're in the car.
I just saw Godzilla.
Yeah. When you're like driving the kids to school and then I'll put Triple J
on.
Wait,
you think this was played on the radio?
Breakfast radio.
Triple J, it must
Triple
have been.
J though, it would have been.
Reckon?
100%.
Well, if it's here.
Yeah, true.
I don't know, it could have been one of those Alanis Morissette things where it wasn't, like, played at all, but I mean, everyone was so obsessed with the Blair Witch Project.
I think there's enough of, like, you know, I'm not mad for the
Blair
song
Witch
itself,
has enough cultural cachet to...
Yeah, and I think we've seen, particularly when we talked about the all-time Hottest 100, like, the Triple J audience, even at this point, still are big for 80s post-punk or whatever. I think there would be a lot of love for this song.
So fucking weird, man. I can't imagine hearing this in the car, on the radio, and then like the sound grabs from the film, which like, because there is a certain spookiness to the song. Like it sounds like the synth riff.
Oh,
and
it
just
sounds
like
exactly like a 90s dystopic sci-fi
exactly,
horror film
yeah.
that it was first
You know what
used
actually
for?
Reminded me a little bit of? West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys. The East End Boys and West
End Girls. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's got that synthy 80s riff.
Yeah.
If this got one person to go back and listen to Metal Box, then it was worth it being here. Because early pill rule.
Fair
but
enough.
It's so fucking weird that it's here, man. Mm,
it's so weird. You know what upsets me most about it? That it's so close to being Witch House, and it's not Witch House.
Is it Proto Witch House?
Proto Witch House.
It may be Proto Witch House. Witch House, for people listening,
it's entirely possible.
One of the best subgenres of electronic music ever made. If you want an introduction to it, I have a Spotify playlist.
I'll bet you do.
Or you can just listen into Adam's podcast, The Witching Hour, where he talks about Witch House.
Don't tempt me, Frodo.
that wonderful period of the, like, between, like, 2010 to, like, 2015, where, like, every year there was a new niche micro-genre, like, C-pop.
Witch House being the best one.
Vaporwave.
The best one.
Eco-grime. Bubblegum
bass.
The
one.
That was a good time, man. Every year we got some new insanely niche genre of music that only lasted for 18 months.
And now we have no cash, no jobs, and no hope.
Man, Witch House is still going. It's alive in Russia.
Just to take us back to a movie corner before we move on to the next song, I just looked up the movie Hardware. It stars Dylan McDermott, not to be confused with Dermot Mulroney.
That's what I confused him with, thank
it
you.
It also features cameos from Iggy Pop and Lemmy. So there you go.
Right.
It says since its release, it has become a cult film, which means only a bunch of people like it, but those people like it a whole lot.
Dang,
we'd love to write our own Wikipedia articles.
So I did listen to a bunch of Witch House after this.
Oh.
You had to prep for your podcast.
Yeah.
I listened to a bunch of PAL after this. It was good times.
Yeah.
I didn't do either of those.
I didn't
things.
Do either of those things either.
I read the synopsis for The Blair Witch Project.
Nothing like being a coward, but being interested in horror as an art form and reading Wikipedia articles for horror films and being like, ooh, that did sound like a scary bit. I'm glad I didn't watch that at the cinema.
I did that for the fucking Human Centipede movies.
Yeah, they're not worth watching.
Yeah, exactly.
You read the novelization.
Oh, no, I'm being human centipeded. She tried to scream out, her mouth muffled by ass.
She screamed centipededly.
Maybe that's how you could start your writing career.
Write a novelization of your book.
It's a good idea to write a novelization of your book, write like a hacky version of The Great Gatsby. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm going to write a hacky version of The Great Gatsby called The Even Greater Gatsby.
Gatsby yet again.
Well, Gatsby, you've gotten even greater since last time.
It's because I'm so rich, and that's part of America. My vague recollections of Analysis of the Great Gatsby.
Let's go look at that green light.
Yeah. Yo, what else is green? Jesus. Money. I love money, said Gatsby aloud.
Greatly.
To himself in the bath.
Gatsby greatly.
Come on. And number 94, it's Turnstile. This is Spray Water on the Stereo. Style coming in at number 94 in the 1999 Hottest 100. That's Spray Water on the Stereo. Before we get into it, just a clarification. This is Turnstile with a Y. The band Turnstile with an I is the modern day punk hardcore band that released a wonderful album last year called Time and Space, which I strongly recommend. But this Turnstile with a Y...
Split EP when?
Oh, dude. Well, they just got back together, so...
Yeah,
legit, right. We could make that happen. I want to see this Turnstile...
Legit, we could make that happen.
I want to put them in contact.
Hi, my name is David James Young. I'm writing from a podcast called Hottest Hundreds and Thousands. Maybe you've heard of it.
We also wrote this really great book called The Even Greater Gatsby.
I was at your last show in Sydney. You know that flying 12-year-old that somehow had tattoos? That was me holding him up.
Did you have temporary tats?
Adam Levine was there. Turnstile are great, though.
Turnstile with an I are great.
They're great.
And from what I've heard from Turnstile with a Y, they're great, too. Nathan, what do you think?
This is pretty fun.
I really dig this.
Right. So this is a Perth band. This is off their debut album called Turnstile Country. Before this, they'd released a couple of EPs and done pretty well. They supported Jebediah and The Living End on a national tour in 98.
So that makes
big
sense.
Two.
Right? Like, yeah. They're from Perth or whatever. But you're like, okay, cool. I think that gives a bit of a sense of where they are.
Musically.
In Australia.
Yeah. So, you know, their debut album comes in, I'd imagine, with a fair bit of hype behind it.
So much hype. Yeah. Triple J presenters named it their favourite album of that year.
Yeah, that was American Rosso.
Indeed.
When they were on Triple J. They
Indeed.
Were like...
The big two.
They won a bunch of Whammies, which are the Western Australian Music Awards.
I saw Rosso at Laneway a couple of weeks ago.
It really is another country, isn't it?
Right?
Turnstile Country.
Yeah, it's Turnstile Country.
This is Turnstile Country.
In Turnstile Country, we call our awards Whammies.
Okay. If we have any listeners in the...
The Great West.
And you want to tell us what the fuck's happening over there? You know where to do it. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and let us know what the fuck's going on over there.
Leave it now so we can read it in 3 yeah. hours' time.
Yeah. There's something in the water.
I have family over there.
Yeah.
Haven't we talked about this? You were born in Perth?
Yeah, I was born in Perth.
There
yeah.
you go. Mm.
So what is a whammy?
It's a Western Australian music industry.
Oh, I just don't understand. There's another language. this is just like, it's really fun. The little synth things going around everywhere and like the big sing-along chorus.
Yeah, just the chorus of saying, threaten your neighbours with a hose.
It's good, right?
If you grew up in a major city, you mightn't have this, but growing up in suburbia, you piss about with the hose with the people are over
and you
that.
Do that like shitty little, oh, I'm going to wet you with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when you're watering a garden.
Because, you know,
don't want to wipe
the police.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, there's, there's water restrictions on.
Yeah, that's yeah. right.
It'll ruin their stereo too.
Well, yeah, it's very funny to be like, I'm going to spray your stereo with this hose.
And also, like, you know, I like what they're playing with the whole destruction of music kind of idea coming in with that as well. The anti-music, which is very much brought about by that, you know, the Casio.
Yeah.
Flatulent as hell
oh,
sounding
the
keyboard
player in this band is having the time of their lives.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah.
He's going as hard as he possibly can.
Hell
I think,
yeah.
I think, you know, the chorus would be such a big sing-along thing at these gigs, but then the... would also be a moment for everyone to kind of do it.
Yeah.
yeah, and that's it's nice. This is like, okay.
Yeah, this is just fun, cool, like indie rock, like, you know, yeah. like Australiana. Yeah.
yeah. You know how we always like discover every now and then just like a couple of underdog Australian bands, and it's just like, man, that fucking rips. Like hearing like Cinnamon Lip by Pollyanna,
mm-hmm.
or hearing Drugs by, I think it was Ammonia.
Yep.
And this adds to the canon. Wholeheartedly in support of this one. Fuck, it makes me smile.
Their last album, their 2018 one, featured Bob Nastanovich from Pavement.
Huh. Getting on board,
which would, you know, considering the elements that this band is playing
checks
with. Yeah, it does check out. It's really lovely.
It was something very wholesome was on the YouTube clip for this song. It only has 828 views. Not a great number, but very sweet. The video for itself is a static image that is the album art that it's from, and then on that's in the top corner of the video, and the rest of it is black with white text describing who the band are, what instruments they're performing, who performs the vocals, and then a block of text explaining that the riff was inspired by this and this was inspired by that. Very wholesome, that.
Oh.
And there's only two comments. One of them is someone saying, hey, are you Adam the guitarist? And then this guy says, I'm JE. I do most of Turnstile and Adam's online stuff. I wrote the text for the above videos, and Adam helped me put them together. I also wrote his Wikipedia article, and sometimes I walk his dogs. That's fucking sweet as shit, man. That is wholesome.
I want to just zoom in on Adam.
A-D-E-M.
Yeah.
That's a weird one, man.
What's going on, Perth?
What's going on, Western Australia, man?
A-D-E-M.
Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, and Turnstile with a Y. Like, everything's backwards.
E.
A dem.
It's upsetting to me. Because I'm obviously team A. So.
The A team.
That was a gimme and I missed it. And I'm really mad.
This is some... To say though that like there was a lot of hype building up to this and like a lot of love for it. This is the only time we talk about Turnstile.
I think apart from kind of their comeback that they had last year, I don't know whether a whole heap was going on. I don't know.
Dogs to look after and... 3 hours behind.
Well, his mate's walking them. It's all right.
Okay, he's not even looking after them. Great little track, really. You think, as we get further through these countdowns, that we always say, you know, oh, these kind of tracks are going to be popping up less and less. But, you know.
But here it is here in it this is. One. If you extrapolate one to every song, then more than ever.
Yeah. You know, we live one song at a time.
Yeah.
In this podcast.
But we are seeing them less and less. And this is, I don't think this will be the last one.
Like underdog Australian songs.
And like a few countdowns ago, it would be in like the 60s or something. Yeah. Like it'd be much higher up maybe.
Yeah, well, yeah. Australian music. Fuck, support Australian music. All of it.
Support six Australian musics, four songs each.
Yes.
Proud of finger. Hey, for this next song, there is some discussion about suicide and also about mental illness. If that's not something that you really feel like you can listen to right now, feel free to just skip ahead. We'll catch you in the next song.
Number 93, this is Elliot Smith with Waltz number 2, EXO. Smith coming in at number 93 in the 1999 Hottest 100. That's Waltz number 2, XO from the album XO. Adam, you have chosen to talk about this song.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you have a good relationship with Elliot Smith's music. Are you new to it? Are you more like recent? Like, did you kind of come to it after he died or like...
The reputation of Elliot Smith obviously precedes him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in this age of, you know, like where you can access so much information at any given time, I think a metric of how well-loved a band kind of is what that information kind of is and how the level of detail that it goes into and how minute the things that you can kind of uncover it, are. And in the case of Elliot Smith, there's no end to that. People obviously love this guy and have loved him for such a long time that you know they delve into his lyrics and his songs and things that he said in interviews, and it's just all so freely available and put out there to be shared inside this community of Elliot Smith fans and kind of like poured over in that kind of way and loved. And I think part of that is to do with Elliot Smith's story. He, much like Jeff Buckley, was lost to us far, far too young at the age of 34 from two stab wounds to the chest that I think has been pretty well established was self-inflicted, even though there are a couple of things.
It's officially been ruled suicide. But it is, he was fighting with his partner at the time.
Yeah.
They themselves were also not mentally healthy like Elliot was.
He shared a lot of his suffering quite openly and quite honestly. And, you know, this kind of involved, you know, major depressive episodes, ADHD, you know, a very well documented history with substance abuse. And people have kind of gone back over like things that he said in his songs and speculated as to where that could have come from based on, you know, his childhood and various other things like that. So there's a lot of kind of talk like there. But what you end up with is basically like this archetype of not only a brilliantly talented singer-songwriter, but also that kind of tragic figure. And again, like I draw a comparison to Jeff Buckley because I think they're the two kind of really big examples of that. But it has kind of been cemented as kind of like an archetypal kind of thing.
The Jeff Buckley comparison is an interesting one because in my head, I forgot that Elliot was still alive at this point. In my head, I figured he died in the early 90s, like not in 2003.
I discovered him the year after when they put out the posthumous album From a Basement on a Hill.
Yeah,
and that was the feature album on Triple J. And I was just like, oh, this is a cool new artist. What's the go here?
And that's a wonderful CD as well. Unfinished. But as a child, I remember my parents had the EXO and the Figure Eight records.
Yeah.
So I've always known him. And those are the two albums of his that I still go to now if I ever want to listen to Elliot Smith. He just such a beautiful, sad, soft, intimate, warm songwriter.
Absolutely.
And this song, I've always loved this song even before I could comprehend what it was about. I just love the waltzing nature of it all. I think it's one of probably his best written songs. I think that there's so many layers here to unpack and it's so beautiful. Heaps. It's about a number of things, obviously, but it's definitely about his mother and the relationship she had with his stepfather, who was an abusive alcoholic man by all accounts. And at the start there, like she says, she picks karaoke and the song she picks is Kathy's Clown, Everly Brothers tune, which this is not mentioned in the song, but that song has the line in it, "Don't want your love anymore," which is a song. So she's saying that to the abusive partner. And then he then responds in turn with the Linda Ronstadt tune, "You're No Good." The refrain of that song is just constantly, "You're no good, you're no good, you're no good."
Yeah. Like, which he then quotes
in the song.
In the song.
Yeah, itself. Which is, God, that is good songwriting. That is so on another goddamn level.
So I read a really interesting thing that people, as I said, because there's so much information about Elliot Smith and his process out there. And apparently the way he would work was he'd start by explicitly stating what he wanted the song to be about, and he would write it as explicitly as he possibly could. And then the process from there was to go back and disguise it.
Perfect.
You can see how this would be the product you arrive at if that was the way that you worked with things, you know? It's just such magnificent songwriting. See, I don't have a really strong relationship with Elliot Smith, but I've inherited a kind of secondhand reverence based on people who I've been around who have been, most of them singer-songwriters themselves, who have been deeply influenced by Elliot Smith work and deeply moved by it. Wow. And just being in contact with those people who I love has given me, as I said, like a passive love and reverence for the work of Elliot Smith. And I kind of keep trying to go back and listen to, but there's something about it that seems like elusive almost. Like there's a delicacy in his songwriting, even in the way that it sounds to me, that it's like, I can't look at it straight ahead. It always shifts to the peripheries.
I had that for a very, very similar relationship for a long time and not anymore because now I do quite love Nick Drake, but for a long time Nick Drake was very similar to me, and again, same thing, sad, tortured, soft folk artist who died too young. But for a long time I didn't really understand Nick Drake records, and then one day it just kind of clicked. So I implore you, Adam, and also listeners, if you're not an Elliott Smith fan, the record, this is from EXO and also Figure Eight, just because they're the two that I happen to be familiar with, but they're both beautiful, sad, wonderful records. And just like this as well, right? Like, and you, what you do when somebody dies too young, what is now presumably a suicide, you unpack the work and you're like, oh, it has to have led up to it. It's like, we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. Some of my favorite authors and musicians have died too young and of suicide. And you look back and you're like, oh, they were always there, weren't they? And that isn't the case at all the time. Like, Robert Smith's still alive and happy, and he's written songs about wanting to kill himself. And like, he's just a happy dude. Mm. Like, so it isn't always the case. But you can't help but read into, even though it's in the context of the mother having a bad relationship with her partner. But when it says like the, I'm here today and I expect it to stay on and on and on. I'm tired. As a bridge. Like, Jesus Christ, man. I want to give this dude a hug so bad. Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah. And that rawness and that vulnerability and that honesty while still being in such a mold of craft, I think is what people keep coming back to in terms of Elliott Smith being valuable. Steve Huey from AllMusic describes his delivery as spiderweb thin. I love that so much. Mm. That's like the perfect way to describe his voice. And to me, like, his writing always kind of reminds me of a piece of like wood that still hasn't been treated yet. It's so raw and earthy, but it's still crafted. Mm.
What I love about this song, and also Smith in general, but particularly in this song, is that whilst it is, there's a rawness and the spiderweb thin quality of his voice is very accurate and a great descriptor. Yeah. But what I love is that it isn't just him and a guitar singing a song. He has a band that works with him.
Yeah.
Like the waltzing nature
those
of the band here.
Those are all his
here.
Best songs.
Like, yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
And this kind of was only coming about at this time as well because he just signed to a major label. So he was deciding to get
that's
big.
Right.
And he's got some really interesting things that really go against the grain about what a lot of the narrative of a lot of other 90s bands were putting out at this time.
Yeah,
because
totally.
He was like, oh, I've signed to a major label and honestly, I don't feel like my work has been compromised at all. There are just a bunch of other people who really care about me doing well now. You just don't hear that in the 90s. That's just not what the cultural narrative is. So it's refreshing to have him kind of say that. And he was someone who cared very deeply about his work. There's an anecdote of him performing on Dutch TV. Mm. And it was this very song. And he just stopped halfway through and he's like, I just wasn't feeling that. And I'm not going to do this song if I can't do it justice. So we'll just move on.
Wow.
It's incredible.
So did you, after finding the 2004 record, David, go back and rediscover the more similar records?
Yeah. So I got the record Figure Eight. Yeah, fell pretty heavily for that record. Like,
it's a beautiful album.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know him enough. Like, I feel like I should have spent a lot more time with his music over the years, but like everything that I've heard has really kind of spoken to me. And yeah, like I get a lot out of what he's doing from a musical standpoint. And obviously, yeah, like as you guys were talking about, there's a lot of, you know, like vulnerability and tortured soul elements in what he does. And yeah, it's pretty full on. But when I do listen to Elliott Smith, it's always like, why don't I listen to Elliott Smith more? You know? And like, man, this is such a beautiful song. It's got one of those melodies, like that chorus melody. It's like, it feels like I've known it forever. Even before I heard it, like I swear I knew this song. It's so instantly familiar and it's so warm and so instantly recognizable. Just, yeah, a really fascinating, really beautiful songwriter that created these really simple, really, really beautiful songs that obviously stood the test of time. I think another one of the main things is like going back and hearing this stuff and it's just like, oh, so this is what all the artists I like were listening to.
Fully.
It's a cool thing to kind of see the influence that he had and still has over people to this very day.
This is honestly the most closely I've listened to an Elliott Smith song. I didn't get into Elliott Smith in like high school or anything like that. And because of the kind of reputation you talked about, it's monolithic in the same way that Jeff Buckley is.
Yeah. You know? And when it gets that monolithic, if you've missed it...
Yeah, it's hard to be like, I'm going to get into this. Also because the music and the story is so tragic, so it's hard to be like, I'm going to like get real sad for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose to like indulge in some sad music.
And it's going
to
be tricky.
Yeah. Like,
I'm gonna do my darndest to get bummed out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's because that's so different to like, if I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to put some sad music that I know on because that's what I
that's
need.
That's comforting.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, but this, like, listening to this, this is an incredibly beautiful track, and I think I will make more of an effort to. But it is that, yeah, definitely that thing. Whenever there's such a big legacy and it's an emotional legacy, it's different to, you know, it's like, oh, why have I never listened to like just this massive artist before? But when it's, there's, you know, such pain and stuff in there that people connect to.
Yeah.
It's hard to be like, all right, time to like throw on the big singles until I get comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just hammering that plus 30.
This episode,
all over the place.
This is a messy barbecue so far. This is not like
real messy.
We're threatening the neighbors with a hose.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's only like 20 past 12 at this point.
Yeah, but we've already listened to PIL and Elliot Smith. Like,
yeah, wow.
In the middle of the day?
Some crazy shit's going down. And number 92, this is Macy Gray. Sex-O-Matic Venus Freak. Super love is something that they say is very rare. In the dark and in your world, it's everywhere and I'm free. Like an X-rated movie star. It's the way you love me down. It's the way you love me down. Every time we kiss, you bring out the woman in me. And every time you holler out my name, you set me free. And Macy Gray, coming in at number 92 in the 1999 Hottest 100. That is the track Sex-O-Matic Venus Freak. It comes from her album Macy Gray on How Life Is. Nathan.
Of course she had other songs.
Yeah, I forgot she had a career.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this checks out.
It's bad of me for not... Yeah, I wonder if all artists that have had one hit have also had other songs. Maybe some of them.
Makes you think.
This is just a jam, right? This is just like a super sexy,
funky
jam.
Listening to I Try, I would never have thought that Macy Gray definitely fucks.
Yeah.
Macy Gray fucks. This,
I get much more of a sense of her as an artist here. It's like, oh, right, I get what you're doing.
It's early days, but let's keep a tally. This is definitely the horniest song so far.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll see.
Is it hornier than Elliot Smith?
Okay, well, Elliot Smith's going to have saddest, and we'll keep a tally of these things.
Oh, good.
Saddest and horniest.
Just the big two.
Yeah. We'll take a leaf
it's called the big two for a reason.
We'll take a leaf out of the Share Zone's book, and we'll find the songs that have the highest depression level, horny level, and genius level.
All right. Okay. What's the most genius level so far?
So far.
A public image.
No doubt.
All right. This is just like great 90s funk. There's just a lot of pieces and they're all working. Like the bass is super fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great. Any kind of pop song that is very female sex positive is great. I think many years ago we talked about Shoop. What a great time that was.
Yeah.
You know, pop songs that are objectifying men from a female sexual perspective is good.
Not even that. It's just sex positive.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's right. It's like, I become a sex-o-matic Venus Freak when I'm with you. When you kiss, you make me feel like a woman. She just loves this fucking dude, man. Or woman. I'm not sure who the...
Yeah.
And also, not to like belabor a point, because the song just is a jam without any cultural context. Having a strong, powerful black woman being vocal in it, asserting her agency as a sexual agent is fucking cool.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the more you look at Macy Gray as a person, she was just all about that. She has a statue of herself naked in her house.
Oh, that's hell pretty baller, yeah, man. She does.
A fountain. Sprays water out the top of her head.
You gotta lean into it, man.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, not for me. I mean, say what you will, but
do you think she shouldn't have agency? Obviously, just a jam, funky as hell, cool, like funk rock pop number. And you're right, I get way more of a sense of her, of what she does as an artist with this way more than I do with I Try.
Yeah. I can sort of place this song in a lineage of music way better. I'm like, oh, this is great.
And also just, I love the fact that it's called Sex-O-Matic Venus Freak. Like, it's just that total funk over the top kind of thing. Like, drawing back to the 70s and whatever. That straight up in your face, let's go kind of thing.
Yeah, the way too many descriptors that like, so I was like Palm and Funkadelic did similar stuff.
It's
that particular kind of aesthetic, and I don't know what it is, but it's like over the top cool.
There's honestly a sense of Afrofuturism in it, saying sexomatic Venus freak. That's a science fiction-y term for black positivity. You know what? This is a cool as shit song. I thought I came in, I'm like, yeah, I like it. And now I'm like, yeah, I like it.
I like it, and like, it's right to like it.
Yeah, that's right. Don't worry. I'm very woke. I like basic gray sexomatic Venus freak.
Put in your Tinder bio. Yeah.
I talked about it with three other white dudes on a podcast I co-host.
We all thought it was pretty cool.
This is what I imagine like a mum who just heard Faith No More's cover of Easy feels after picking up like The Real Thing or like King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime or some shit. Well, this was not what I was expecting. Or like a mum picking up like Nimrod after hearing Tommy Alive. Like,
are you Trojan horsed by I Try?
Oh yeah, big time. Big time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because she loves a bit of a groove, a bit of soul, a bit of funk, a bit of horniness. You know, everyone knows her for choking and stumbling and trying to hide it, but...
She ain't hiding here.
Ain't hiding shit.
She seems so self-conscious in that track as well. Like, that's why this was such a surprise for me also. Like, the persona is totally
it's
different.
It's like when the shy art nerd girl at high school ends up being like...
Takes the glasses off.
Yeah. The Village Bicycle Baby.
She was beautiful all along.
Oh my God, yeah.
On Bicycle, so her stage name is Macy Gray. Her real name is Natalie Renee McIntyre.
Natalie Bicycle.
When she was 6 years old, she fell off her bike and found herself lying underneath the mailbox of someone with the name Macy Gray. And then for years, like, wrote stories about Macy Gray, and it was just kind of the thing as a kid that, you know, like, oh, this is my character kind of thing, and then adopted it as her stage name later on. The original elderly man, Mr. Macy Gray, tried to sue her.
No! You are kidding.
At this, like, when she became a worldwide, he was like, oh, I want a piece of this pie. I'm Macy Gray.
That's so fucking
And failed to get any money out.
Shocker.
It's very good.
Well, he tried to sue her ass and he failed.
We all understand that. Like, I live in fear of the original Nathan Harrison suing me.
Oh, yeah, because we all have stage names. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's so funny, man. God damn it, Mr. Gray.
Yeah. He tried.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Macy Gray writing stories as well, and that goes to what she was originally planning. She was in college studying screenwriting when she fell into singing. She originally thought, no, I don't really have that much of a voice. It's not something that anyone really wants to listen to. And I have to say, like, as a kid, Macy Gray was one of my first examples of coming up against a non, you know, pop, traditionally beautiful voice. It was unusual. And I think there's a real value in that.
I remember it being grating as a kid.
Yeah.
I remember being
because of your baby ear palates.
Exactly, yeah.
But who knows, like, whether that introduction to, you know, like, non-traditionally beautiful voices had any kind of effect later on in terms of, you know
what
I mean?
But it's important.
But it's, like, exactly. And now, like, I feel like we are awash with voices that, you know, earlier on would not nearly be considered radio worthy and whatever that happens to mean, you know, like it's just so not a thing anymore. So she was writing songs for other people, and then someone failed to show to record a demo one day, so she stepped in, and then from there it just kind of all snowballed. She got in contact with a producer while she was working at a cash desk somewhere, and then she started gigging in jazz clubs, and then it all kind of took off from there. But it wasn't something that she ever intended to do, and it's one of those kind of like, I think one of those things when you don't, sorry to use the phrase, try too hard, sometimes you can end up having more success.
That's
really
cool.
When you just hold it lightly, and, you know, like, you hear stories like that all the time. People saying like, yeah, I loved doing it, but I never aspired to do it.
But it doesn't sound like she did love doing it. She's just she's like, oh, okay, I'll sing it, I guess. And it's so funny. She doesn't love her job. Like,
but I think it's one of those things, like...
It's all right. Yeah, I don't mind it. You know, like, nobody loves to work.
I shouldn't complain.
I shouldn't complain. I'd love to be a screenwriter one day. But, like, in the meantime, I guess I'll... Yeah,
handing out a screenplay all the time. Could you read this, maybe? I'd love to make a lateral shift.
I truly think sometimes, unfortunately, one of the things that can kill your success is by being too passionate. Like, you get in your own way really severely.
Sure.
I think when you just find yourself doing an activity that you enjoy, and that's it, you don't think about it any further than that, you don't have any aspirations for it, that's when you can really, really find success with it.
Yeah. Nobody wants someone being too thirsty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you just it becomes too much for you and you get clogged up.
Oof. I was thinking about that the wrong way, baby. Number 91, it is Pennywise with their rendition of Men at Work's Down Under.
Traveling in a fight from Cambrai, on a heavy trail at the Luzon Bay. Met a strange lady, she made me nervous. Took me in and gave me breakfast. She said, she come from a land down under.
Pennywise coming in at number 91 in the 1999 Hottest 100. That's Down Under, obviously, originally by famed Australian band Men at Work. Do we have to do a Men at Work primer for those listening?
No, why not? Who are Men at Work?
Well, they were a very famous Australian band in the 80s.
Very different from Men at Home, if you know what I'm saying.
Getting like a right-wing pundit thing. You can just call them Men. We're always at work.
Classic. Fronted by Scottish-born vocalist Colin Hay, they had several big new wave hits in the 80s. This was their biggest one. The other big hits were Who Can It Be Now, Be Good John. There you go.
Nailed it.
That basically just sounded like fucking Goldfinger.
Well, that's who it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, who can it be now?
It's, yeah, it's Goldfinger. Who can it be
Goldfinger.
Now?
Goldfinger.
Be Good Johnny and Overkill were the other two big hits. Overkill had a revival in interest after Colin Hay performed it in the hit television series Scrubs.
It is weird.
It was a little bit weird.
It was weird and contextless.
But yes. I liked it.
All right.
I like that version.
I think it was bad. It was just weird.
Mm.
And had
it's,
no
it's my favorite Men at Work song, so yeah.
I can't get to sleep.
Think about the situations. Yeah, it's a great tune.
Too deep.
Pennywise, on the other hand, noted melodic punk / skate punk band from the 90s, inexplicably covered Down Under, and this is a Human Centipede thing, man. This is Turtles All the Way Down. I've seen this cover get covered more than I've seen the original get covered.
Really?
Oh, man, like bands in high school and pubs and all this sort of shit. Always seeing a cover of a cover live is one of the weirdest fucking things you'll ever see.
Too deep.
Goes down too deep, baby. Yeah, this is harmless. It's like, like, they basically wrote a Pennywise song and just added the lyrics over the top of it. There was no, like, through line. There's no connection to the original song. Like, you know, there's no flute. There's no, like, they don't even have the same, like, chord progression or anything like that. Everything kind of changes. It's a bit cheap, it's a bit tacky, but like, if you're into that sort of thing, then it's super fun. So yeah,
I
can't really fault them for it.
Pennywise were always just on the periphery of my 90s punk adoration. That kind of 90s punk scene was certainly where my tastes lay, but I never really got into Pennywise. Like, I remember liking the Full Circle record. That's a good album. But I hadn't heard this cover before. I guess that's because it's an alright song, but if I had heard it as a teenager, maybe, like, if I happened to luck out or luck, I don't know, depending on how lucky you view it. Yeah, lucky. The opposite of lucking out is lucking in. It could definitely have been a LimeWire find or like a...
Oh, totally.
A Napster or SoulSeek find of just finding the cover, like, Men at Work punk cover. Like, yeah.
NoFX plus Bad Religion.
Yeah, NoFX plus Bad Religion. WMA.exe. Like, obviously not being Australian themselves makes it feel like maybe they just put it on an Australian EP and it'd be like, oh yeah, cool, that's nice or whatever.
Well, it was included in their album Straight Ahead as a bonus track, and it was included because they had such a strong following in Australia.
Yeah, it was the Australian New Zealand release.
That's
of the
right.
And that's totally cool. I get why you would do that. Like, it makes sense from a band's point of view. It's like how if bands are big in Japan, they chuck a few Japanese bonus tracks on.
It just feels like the musical equivalent of receiving a really thoughtful gift that you just don't want.
Yeah.
Like, and the dog dragging in the dead bird.
kind of, not that bad, but, you know, like, you mention in passing to your auntie that you kind of like something, and then they get you, like, a shirt with it on it.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Those, like, if you like Anne Rice, which I haven't read any Anne Rice, and then you're well-meaning, I'll get you knock-off Twilight books. Not Twilight books, knock-off Twilight books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she remembers that one conversation.
She remembered that you said, like, Yeah, I don't mind Interview with the Vampire. It's pretty.
Which you were just making conversation for.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, it's cheesy and fun. The movie was all right. Like, Brad Pitt was like, at his peak then, right? Yeah. That's, And then she's like, I remember they really like vampires. And these things seem cool. And this one is called, like, A Love Eternal. And it's not Twilight, but it's clearly a knockoff of Twilight. Anyway.
Andrew, is this your novel?
No, man. I'm writing The Greater Gatsby. Nail into it now. What this lacks compared to the original is the idea of the communal sing-along that the original, when you hear it in Australia, it's whatever. But when you hear it and you're overseas and you're like seven beers in, there's one other expat from St. Leonard's, and then you sing along to it.
Because it's kind of like, it doesn't feel like a very good Pennywise song.
No, yeah. Pennywise have better songs.
And it's not, yeah, it's it just, doesn't
it's
have much
super
of the,
unimaginative. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's a very good cover. I wonder if they didn't know the song very well and they were like, oh, we should do a bonus track because we have a lot of Australian fans.
Oh, yeah. You can just imagine Fletcher's just like looking at the lyrics on a piece of paper.
That sounds kind of right now.
Right? Like, and they're like, oh, we should just do this.
She made what's me a, nervous.
What's the biggest thing? Like, oh, Down Under. Everyone in Australia loves Down Under. Let's cover that. Should we listen to it more than twice?
It's too obvious to do an Aka Daka track.
Yeah.
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 So they got to do this.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, man. It's just a bit of a swing and a miss. It's not terrible.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I wouldn't have voted for it, though.
No.
If you're a Pennywise fan who has seen them play live in Australia and are pretty psyched on the fact that this international band likes your country so much, maybe that's enough.
Well, I mean, it got in.
Yeah, you know? Because we are Australia, the world suburb. Like, we're not like an international destination. Maybe if you'd seen them live and it was an encore, you'd be like, oh, yeah, cool. I remember that.
But I'd want the song itself to be a bit better.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, punk covers aren't that hard.
Yeah, no, they're not.
So apparently, according to the internet, the first phrase, traveling in a fried out combi, it kind of resembles someone saying a horse eating at a market in Portuguese. Can anyone confirm that who's listening who knows Portuguese? Because that makes me curious. Is the internet full of it?
Are we big in Portugal? Do we need to release a bonus?
Have we accidentally said something that in Portuguese kind of sounds like we're being offensive? I'd also like to know that.
We've said a lot of things that just were straight offensive. So
let's do a cover of our favourite Portuguese spoken word track. Nathan, you start.
I'm going to have to pick Portugal the Man.
True.
I will cover that song.
I mean, you are a rebel just for kicks. So.
Man, it's so weird. Those guys are like mainstream famous now.
I know. When I saw the McGroove and the Moo up on the back screen of the, like, they were playing their set, and because they don't really do like much banter, it'd come up and be like, hey, don't worry, it's still coming, we're still gonna play it, don't worry about it.
That's great.
That's
and then
really
and then ellipses, y'all got any weed or
also similar- when they were in the country they were really good and they're like, Sunrise, you seem racist, we're not gonna go on you.
Yeah.
Alright, Portugal the Man, pretty good.
Good call.
But the best thing about Portugal the Man is when I saw them live at the Big Day. Why are we talking about Portugal? Anyway, I saw them play at the Big Day Out and they did a cover, speaking of excellent covers, of
Pennywise's Down Under.
Day Man, Fighter of the Night.
Oh, nice.
Champion of the Sun.
Yeah.
When I saw them, they opened with an instrumental of From Who the Bell Tolls.
So I guess what we're really saying is Portugal the Man. Pretty great band.
Check them out.
Pretty good. That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands. Hey, thanks so much for listening. Thanks to FBR Radio for having us once again. Before we get out of here, you know what the deal is. We are going to be going through our favourites and our least favourite songs. And continuing that ever-continuing story where we can't get to sleep.
And
we talk about people on the street. Nominate our carryover champs and our carryover chumps to see if they changed from last week. So my favorite song this week, Turnstile, but my champ remains Plastic by Spiderbait. As for my least favorite song this week, I'm going to go with The Order of Death by Pill. And I'm also going to make that my new chump. Adam.
Yes. Look, my favourite from this episode is Elliot Smith.
Yes.
It's a really good one. But I think I'm going to retain Spider Bait. That's my favourite. It's my champ. My least favourite track is The Order of Death, because, you know, don't tease me by not being a proper Witch House song. Don't do that. Be a proper Witch House song. Special shout out to Portugal the Man.
True.
We love you, Portugal the Man.
Hell yeah.
Very good. My chump remains Sugar Ray.
My favourite of the week is also Elliot Smith with Waltz Number 2, XO. It is my new champ as well.
Very good.
My least favourite, it's tricky, man. I'm going to have to give it to Pennywise's Down Under.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, didn't hate it at all, but just was more, I just unperturbed by it. But my chump easily remains Sugar Ray.
Yep. Elliot Smith for my favourite, but I'll keep Plastic. And I think Pennywise is my least favourite, but keeping Every Morning as my chump.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go, folks. All right, 10 songs down, 90 to go until we are done with the 1990s entirely.
Basically there.
We're basically there.
Yeah, and then 90s nostalgia is illegal.
So outlawed.
Yeah, so enjoy it for the next 18 eps.
Yes.
Running tally, horniest song remains Sexomatic
Venus Freak. Sexomatic
Venus
Freak.
Most depression song is XO Waltz Number 2.
Yeah.
Genius level song, yet to be determined. Tune in next week, see if we find it then.
Fucking genius.
Good forward sell.
Thank you.
Good one. Taught him everything he knows.
He's writing a book.
I hear it's going to be greater
than your average book. Gatsby.
Oh my God. On behalf of Miss Andrew McDonald.
Good night.
Mr. Nathan Harrison.
Bye.
Mr. Adam Buncher.
Too deep.
My name is Portugal the Man. Everything is good for you.
Everything is too deep for you.
Too deep.
I'm Big Kev, and I'm asking all Aussies to try my brand new laundry products. You know, we've been using overseas brands, but I reckon if you put mine to the test, I know they're the best.
We'll give it a go.
You beauty.
Yeah.